Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Apologies, we're a bit late getting started. As Jovan noted in the chat, we did have a very secretive, behind closed doors, players only meeting that we had to attend. But happy to be here.
There was a lot of emotions. Furniture was being thrown around.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean,
a little bit of cursing.
We had to separate Jared Vanderbilt from JJ Redick yet again. A lot of tempers were running high. That's for sure. Happy to have everybody here. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. I can't complain. I'm not going to lie to you guys. It was a little bit of a chore watching that film this morning, but I did it for straight love of the game, love of this show. Out of respect for the quality of content that we got to produce out here, so I did tune in, and I'm excited, I guess, to dive into it a little bit with you guys.
I feel like we have more to talk about off the court than on the court right now, but last night was interesting.
It definitely was. The Lakers obviously fell to the Thunder. That was the high. The Lakers were the highest underdog. I don't know what the phrasing would be for this, but it was
the largest underdog at home they've been since 1990.
Right, since 1990. So they were a minus 18.5 going into the game, and the Thunder did cover that. And I'm not surprised about that. The Lakers played without LeBron, without Marcus Smart, who looks like he will be back sometime before the playoffs, without Luka, without Austin Reeves, Jackson Hayes, his foot hurt, like all kinds of things were happening. And so not a surprise that the Lakers got crushed by the Thunder, though they were competitive for a little bit there. I don't know. Jovan, were there at least some fun moments in this game that you felt like were worthwhile, or was this whole thing just kind of a butt kicking?
I mean, it turned into a butt kicking, but I liked the first quarter and a half and the spirit that the group came out with. I mean, look, the last or two of the last three times they played the Thunder, and the two times they were closer to at full strength, they were down 30 points early in the second quarter. So this was progress from that. And like, we just saw better players struggle against this Thunder defense last week and not be able to get into sets and run actions and not get back in transition. And this group was more competitive than that. So like there was a collective progress, I would say, that had me encouraged with the first like 18 minutes of the game. I would say the biggest thing I was encouraged by, though, with the totality of everything, was like the South Bay guys, right? Like the young guys. If you look at Drew Timmy and him being this like point forward, point center, JJ talked about it after the game that during the walkthrough, they were talking about him bringing the ball up the floor and running the offense and some of the things they wanted him to initiate. So we saw some of him bringing the ball up and going into DHOs and being this just handoff hub for the Lakers. You had Adu Thiro, who just shot out of a cannon. And I said this last night on my show, like a little Thompson 20 with just the way, like, you know, I don't invoke that lightly, but just the way that he stands out as an athlete, like when he's out there, he looks like the best athlete on the floor. And he made a three, was getting downhill, getting to the free throw line, attempted 10 free throws last night, and did a lot of that against the Thunder's primary rotation, then the defense and the activity. So I was really impressed with Adu. And then even like, you know, Kobe Bufkin, Nick Smith Jr. started to get into a groove in the fourth quarter against the Thunder's bench guys. So I thought there was a lot to like collectively with the young guys. And that to me is something that, like JJ said before and after the game, the Lakers are looking for their right nine players going into the playoffs. I think there are seven guys who are locks or near locks: LeBron, Marcus, Rui, Luke, DA, Jackson, and Jake. I think those are seven of the nine guys that are going to be playing, but the final two spots are open. And does Drew Timmy make a late push here to try to get converted to the roster? Or does Adu finally pop and emerge in the top nine? Or is it Bronny? Or is it Vando, which we'll get into, Maxi? Like, I don't know how it's going to play out, but it seems like there's a real competition here for those final two spots. And that's the thing I'm most excited for over these final three games, is just seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I agree 100% on Adu Thiro. I've been saying all season that they have to develop him. Obviously, he's been hurt for large stretches, but him getting out there on the floor is an important thing for them. You're right. He does move differently than everybody else. It's incredibly noticeable, though I'm trying to temper that a little bit just because how much of it is he really is this next level athlete, which I think he is. But part of it, for the reason why it sticks out so much, is the Lakers don't have anybody that's athletically on that level. But nonetheless, he was very exciting what we saw him do out there. Obviously, he's got a lot to work on. He's very raw and he's got to get better. But I thought we saw some good things from him. Drew Timmy, you're right. Maybe did the Lakers just waive somebody? Maybe waive Kobe Bufkin or something like that, since he's not guaranteed for next year, and give Drew Timmy that spot. That'll be something that'll be interesting to watch
here. That's what I would do. I said that on my show last night. I would waive Kobe Bufkin and convert Drew Timmy. I just, like, Kobe Bufkin has been on the team for 2 months now, and JJ has played him in how many games of serious competition? Like a few at most. So at this point, in terms of like the peaks, Drew Timmy has had a higher ceiling with this group, and especially with Maxey kind of falling out in the rotation and just not quite being the same presence that he was earlier in the season, and the unreliability of DeAndre Ayton as a starting center. Like I think I would throw Drew Timmy in there, and I just think he has a higher, you know, potential upside in the playoffs for LA.
If I was going to do that too, if I'm Rob Pelinka, I'm putting a second year non-guaranteed on that, just in case he does pop. You want to have some upside there for next year to be able to keep him around on that kind of a deal. Jason, you had to grit your teeth a little bit and suffer through some of that game. What did you think about Lakers OKC, I guess, for the fourth time now this season?
Quickly to follow up on the point that Jovan was trying to make about Timmy, when you look at the ball handling situation, we've just seen enough of these like lower level guards to know that they really can't do it. There's not some obvious fit out there. It's not like Isaiah Thomas is going to come in and save the day for the Lakers. And frankly, I think I've seen enough from Luke Kennard in terms of just his ability to make decisions curling over the top of screens, that like LeBron, Luke, Marcus as your three main like advantage creators is about as good as it's going to get for this year's postseason run before Austin and Luka get back. And so from there, like, there's actually a lot of value in having a play finisher specifically as a screening partner. Obviously, Timmy can hit pick and pop threes and spacing threes, but it's also the little pop shots in the lane, stuff like that. He had like a little floater over Chet early in the game off of a screening action with Luke Kennard that is an example of one of those like play finishing types of sequences. So I'm with you, like, because there's no obvious ball handling answer, converting a play finisher, somebody that can run action with Marcus, run action with LeBron, run action with Luke, it just gives you at least a higher floor, I suppose, as you're trying to compete more in that first round series. Overall, what I thought was fascinating about the game was like the dynamic when you get Lu Dort off of the point of attack. So like Lu Dort starts the game on Rui Hachimura, which makes sense. He's probably your highest level, like three level scoring threat that's out there. And when Rui's just standing in the corner, that means Lu's not pressing the ball. And so like little things like allowing Luke Kennard to run off an off-ball action while Jake Laravia is a hub because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander doesn't feel like pressuring the ball a ton against a guy like Jake. Or even I just thought Luke managed AJ Mitchell's ball pressure pretty well. And AJ Mitchell's actually a pretty good defender, but he's just not as good of a ball pressure player as a Cason Wallace, as a Lu Dort, as an Alex Caruso. And so again, like just them running basic kind of action with Luke to create advantage and having enough play finishing around to capitalize on it. And then on the other end of the floor, like, here's the thing, like this Lakers team, that when they're connected and rotating and communicating, like they can actually be at least a solid defense. And when you play solid defense against the Thunder and they're not being as relentless attacking the rim as they can be, you can play them into some mediocre stretches of offense. And so the Lakers were able to hang around, but ultimately, it just got to the point where when OKC really tightened the screws, they couldn't score. I agree about the standouts in the sense that, like, I mean, there's two different ways to have this conversation. Like, do I think Drew Timmy is a long-term rotation solution for the Lakers as they try to contend for a championship? No. Do I think Adu Thiro is ready to play a dead serious role on a championship-contending team? No. I think he's years away. But you can also say that you were impressed. I was impressed by the shot making from Luke Kennard. There was the Amen Thompson comp is fascinating from Jovan, because like Amen Thompson was just killing Colin Gillespie yesterday, just offensive rebounding because he's just too small for him. And Duthiero had a corner crash out of the right corner in the first half, where he just came flying in. And like, I can't remember which OKC player it was that actually got the rebound, but an OKC player kind of beat him to the ball, but he just came flying in and basically ripped it out of his hands for an offensive rebound.
That was Hartenstein.
Yeah, it was Hartenstein. And like, you can see the potential with him. That's all I'll say. Like, I think picking Aduthiero was a mistake simply based on the fact that the athleticism, as tantalizing as it is, and the upside as tantalizing as it is, the Lakers are in a win now kind of structure, and they needed to prioritize someone who was more capable of playing rotation minutes, kind of the way that a guy like, you know, Baylor Shireman has done for the Celtics over the course of the of this season, obviously in his second season. But the point being, there's a certain amount of like potential that was on display, even though it can be frustrating that the Lakers don't have any sort of actual playable rotation guys. I did leave a little frustrated. I talked about this on my show this morning, but I wanted to kind of run this by you guys to see what your thoughts are and just kind of give your gut reaction to what I say when I say this. So the Lakers in about 500 possessions this year with LeBron, Austin, and Luka off the floor are minus 25 net. They consistently all season have just gotten absolutely annihilated when they don't have their stars on the floor. For all of the positive buzz that Rob Pelinka got during that March run, it was very much a Luka's the MVP, LeBron's the best third option in the league, and Austin is Austin kind of run that slotted everybody into these achievable roles. I mean, look what happened to DeAndre Ayton now that the bottom has fallen out from the shot creation, right? So like, I did leave that thinking like, this is what happens when you do not achieve any sort of win in terms of a rotation piece for 4 years. This is what happens. And by the way, the Celtics this year with Tatum, Brown, and Derek White all off the floor are a big positive in like 650 possessions. The Thunder this year with Shea, Chet, and J-Dub all off the floor are a big positive this year in like 900 possessions. So like that, there, when you don't have depth of talent on the roster, this is where you really feel it when you have nights when you can't play your guys.
So I think there's something to what you're saying there, and it goes back to the concept of having players that can scale up. And we saw it with Thunder, right? Okay, you're missing J-Dub. You're missing players X, Y. They had a bunch of guys that were out. Oh, wait, AJ Mitchell's a badass now, and he can scale up, and he can take on more responsibility. The Lakers talk about the inability to find depth on their roster. They don't have enough guys who, when called upon, can scale up. You've got a lot of guys who, when it's time to do more, because whatever star, Luka, LeBron, Austin, whoever is out, we need to ask more from this player. You're largely asking that of two players who aren't capable of doing that. If the stars are out there, they can be okay in a minimized role. But when it's time to really step up, that's where the warts really begin to show. I think the exception to that has been Luke Kennard. I think Luke Kennard has scaled up a lot better than I would have expected, handling the basketball, the assist numbers, the way that he's navigated things. I think a lot of it is just credit to his overall feel for the game. But otherwise, you've got a lot of guys who, when they are asked to do more, aren't capable of doing so. And I think that is a big problem moving forward for this team, because we're in an NBA that not just the Lakers, but a lot of teams are getting hit by injuries at a greater degree than we've seen in the past. The game's being played very differently. Depth is more important than ever. And so knowing that guys are going to miss games, you need to have players that can step into those bigger roles. So Jason, yeah, I agree 100%. Like, they've got to have guys that can step up and do those things. And right now, they don't. They've got guys where if they're being spoon-fed open shots, they can hit those, or they can make the right rotation in the concept of the team around them, or with DA, if everybody else around him is high energy, he can get swept up in that and have a high energy game himself. But when it comes time to fill that bigger role, they're either not capable or not willing to do it. I don't know. Jovan, where do you fall on that same concept?
It was just kind of clicking in my head as you were explaining that. So they kind of built a roster that can't really scale up without its stars, but also doesn't have like the requisite level of defensive personnel. So that to me sounds like a pretty limited roster. I don't know how else to frame that. It's like you can't like just rely on your defense night to night. So you have to be at a certain level offensively, but then you also don't really have that level of offense outside of your three primary stars. I think that's been the issue we've seen all season to some degree. It's like think about the stretch that Luka just had. Like it had to take like Luka playing his best basketball of the season for the Lakers to get to a certain level, right? And that just to me, it showed like, you know, Austin had to be playing at a certain level, LeBron had to be playing at a certain level, JJ had to be coaching his ass off, and like, of course you need the top of the hierarchy to be delivering at a certain level, but like, it's still, things had to be just right for the Lakers to reach anything close to their ceiling. And when you take away a couple of those pieces, all of a sudden, I mean, I was making this point on my show a couple shows ago, like if the Lakers just had this roster going into a season, how many games would you pick them to win? Like, I think they're maybe a 31 team, and that might be generous. They might be under a 31 team. So they're just in a tough spot right now until like that. That's where I have so much pessimism right now with them going to a playoff series, is like, if we just generally or generously say that they're a 31 team, if I told you a 31 team was playing the Houston Rockets in round one, I would expect Houston to sweep that team, right? Like, that's just too big of a gap there. It's a 51 team versus a 31 team. So that's where I would, like JJ said, he wants to find the right nine guys and establish a certain rhythm going into the playoffs. We'll see if they can go 2-1 down the stretch here. Maybe they show some things that give us some optimism, but they just trailed wire to wire against Dallas, a team that had lost 13 straight home games. They scored their most points against the Lakers in 6 weeks, and Dallas controlled that entire game. Like, it got close several times, but it was never in doubt for Dallas. I just think that the floor and the ceiling right now are both pretty low.
Yeah. And that's the unfortunate spot they're in, especially when the stated goal is to stay alive long enough for Luka and or Austin to return. I have a hard time thinking that's going to happen. If it does, great. But I'm also a little bit wary about them, you know, maybe rushing somebody back in a situation where, I mean, if you're down 1-3 in the series against, like, let's say it's Houston, if that does appear to be the most likely outcome here, and then Luka's ready, you bring Luka in knowing you got to win, you know, four straight or three straight in order to advance. I don't know. I think that's going to be interesting.
And then you got OKC and route. Like, that's the crappy thing right now for them is that they just dropped into the 4-5, and your prize, if Luka somehow miraculously heals his hamstring and is able to return, and the Lakers are able to keep it competitive and they're able to make a comeback in the series, your prize is you get to play this OKC buzzsaw in round two. And that, even with healthy Luka and Austin, might have only been a 4 or 5 game series. So they're just going to be in a really tough spot going into round two.
Can I add one thing on the roster front before we move on? I think, you know, because I think some people would point out like, oh, Oklahoma City has all these first round picks from tanking that allow them to do this and that. And like, oh, what if they get Jaxel Lendenborg in the first round this year? And like, even if you want to take the Oklahoma City example and set them aside, I like Boston to me is the perfect example. And I know it's frustrating to bring them up on a show like this because you got a lot of Lakers fans and there's a heated rivalry there. But like, Boston is actually the perfect example in the sense that like, they identify Kata as a cast-off from the Sacramento Kings. Like, they didn't miss on their first-round picks, and they were worse first-round picks than the Lakers' first-round picks, which were middle first-round picks. Like, Baylor Shireman was the 30th overall pick. Hugo Gonzalez was the 28th overall pick, and they've gotten, like, legitimate rotation minutes out of those guys. Like, they're good rotation players. Baylor has started quite a bit for the Celtics. Like, Jordan Walsh was the 38th overall pick. Like, the problem, it's a cop-out to be like, oh, LeBron, Luka, and Austin make too much money, or because of all the trades from the LeBron AD era, and because we had to use a first-round pick in the Luka era, or in the Luka trade, we don't have the pieces to do this. Or even to say, like, it's a cop-out even to just be like, trades are hard to make, and if Desmond Bane costs this many first, then how do you expect to go get a... The bottom line here is the Lakers have been unable to get any wins on the margins. And the Celtics went from what would literally have been a tanking season. Like they would have, the bottom would have fallen out. Like those four guys I just mentioned are all key rotation pieces for them this year. If those four pieces don't pan out, maybe they're 42 and 42 this year and they're losing in the first round. Maybe Tatum doesn't even bother coming back. But like when you have those kinds of wins, and this is why you have to invest in a pro personnel department that identifies a guy like Kata that had opportunity or that had some potential out in a place like Sacramento. That's why you have to, like, you can't have a 0% hit percentage on your draft picks. Like you can't have a 0% hit percentage. That's like, it's very difficult to overcome. And so like, a lot of times when we talk about multiple cycles, when we say like, oh, the Lakers have 2-3 cycles to figure this out, like you're, the difference between succeeding and failing has a lot to do with, can you have multiple avenues with which you can have a success? And, you know, as Trevor pointed out on the show on Monday, Max Christie is really the last success story from our front office in terms of finding a piece on the margins. And unless you want to count Jordan Goodwin, and I'm not going to give them credit for getting Jordan Goodwin when they let him walk. So yeah, like there's a certain amount of like the Lakers are operating at like a deficit compared to the top teams because they are not winning in any margin in the front office.
I think the key distinction is not that having future picks traded away. We think about the 2027 first from the Russell Westbrook trade, the 2029 first from the Luka trade, the second round picks that are all gone. They don't have a second round pick right now, not until things flip over and then you've got more future second round picks. But I think the key distinction is not that those things are prohibitive of landing the pieces that you need. It just makes your margin for error much less to non-existent, where whenever you do make a move, it's got to hit. Whereas if you do have a treasure trove of draft picks, if you mess up on one or two, well, whatever, we've got like 50 more that we can turn to. And that's the situation some of these teams are in. But you're right. It's when we look at this Lakers roster, why does it feel like they're just missing players? We talked about this last time. You look around the other teams around the NBA and you go, oh, that's like the ninth guy on their roster. And that guy just came in there and did multiple things. He defended, he attacked the closeout, he made the right read and pass. Why do the Lakers not have guys that can do that? It's because of all of these miscues when they don't have any kind of margin for error. And it ultimately leads to a team that is just thin. And that's what we're seeing right now.
I also think it's a couple of the contracts on the books, right? Like imagine if they had $24 million to spend on other parts of the roster, taking the Vando and Maxi contracts off, right? So I think that's another part. It's been like they have not drafted well the last few years. They have some dead money on the books. And then even in free agency, like I think they did the best with a limited situation this past summer, but they've also had a lot of free agency misses as well. So it's like, yeah, I think it's a combination, or as JJ said last night, a confluence of things have led to where the Lakers are currently at.
Well, speaking of which, Jason, what did you take from JJ Redick last night being so fiery? So, I mean, we were talking 3 minutes of the game. Rui messed up. JJ pulled him. He had that incident with Vando. What was your takeaway from that whole situation? Because it did clearly get contentious.
Yeah. So first of all, looking at what he specifically was mad about, it looked like the two plays he was mad about with Rui, there was a missed tag on a Chet dunk where he was kind of just like floating around in the short corner. And then there was that Shea drive where he weirdly was like denying Lou Dort the basketball like on the right wing, which didn't make a ton of sense. And then after he kind of jumped out on Lou Dort and Shea drove past him, he kind of just hopped in one space like four times right in front of JJ. So I think he was kind of pissed about that. The Vando one was kind of tough for me because it looked like he was setting the pin in flare for Bronny as he was kind of running, or the exit screen for Bronny as he's running out to the left wing or left corner. But I think JJ might have been. Did JJ mention specifically why he was mad? Did he actually get into the detail? Because the only thing I could think of is him not making contact on the screen. But like,
He wasn't even asked about Rui. He was only asked about Vando.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So on the Vando play, though, the only thing I can think of that he might be mad at is him either one, he ran the wrong play, so something must have gone off the rails there, or two, he was mad at him for not making contact with Jared McCain on the screen and just lost it. Now, Vando did make a couple of bad mistakes in the end of the first quarter shift. He had a play where he left his feet on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on a pull-up jump shot. And then he had that, like, truly terrible lob line drive pass that he threw to Rui Hachimura that just rifled off the front of the rim and went, like, caroming off the other way. So he had some maybe it was, like, the mistakes.
He also missed three. He got fouled on a three and missed all three free throws.
But, like, so
it was a confluence.
So yeah, it was a bunch of different things. The point is, like, I would argue there wasn't really any reason for him, not enough reason for him to be that upset. However, I kind of, like, get it, and I'm kind of okay with it. And the main reason why is, like, I think that there's two things that need to change with the Lakers as it pertains to the depth in their roster. The first thing is everything we just talked about, which we don't need to get into again. You need more good basketball players. But two, I think JJ is trying, as like he's frustrated with the situation, to start to lead to some culture of accountability. And like when I was interviewing Derek White on Monday, one of the things he said that I thought was really fascinating with regards to the role players was he talked about how there was like a very strong accountability at the beginning of the season. Like, you are not going to play if you don't do these things. And the Lakers haven't had that luxury this season because of just the lack of talent to hold certain guys. Like, take Rui, for example. Like, the Lakers have just needed him to play every time he's been available because they just the alternative is Vando, you know? And like, that comes with certain issues. But like, even though it was fiery, even though it may have been a little irrational, I think JJ is trying to steer the culture in a direction that may have some positive dividends that pay down the line.
What about the comment about DeAndre Ayton can't catch? Is that something he should have said to the media? Is it just, where do you see that?
It's true. He's absolutely right.
It is true.
It's like, I don't know.
He's absolutely right. But
if DA wants the ball more, he needs to catch the damn ball. He needs to establish position. Like, he needs to seal a smaller defender, and he needs to catch the damn ball.
He needs to be venting like that to his assistant coaches, and maybe to his wife. Yeah. but maybe not to the. Maybe
he said it four times in his answer.
Yeah, he's right though. He's right.
I mean, he's not wrong. I compared it to, and this is like the baseline. Like, if you're a big, you have to be able to catch the ball, right? This is the baseline level. It's like a kindergartner that's practicing their coloring skills, but they can't stay in the lines. Like, they can't do the number one thing that you have to do in order to complete the activity. It's catch the basketball. And JJ's like, he did note that it could be the passes. That it could be in some situations the passes weren't the best. And I think
this has been all season to a degree where his hands have been an issue, but I would say it's reared up the last few games. And remember the OKC game, he had Luka and Austin in that game and LeBron. And then the Dallas game, two of the first few possessions of the Dallas game are LeBron trying to hit DA in the paint and DA doesn't catch the ball and it sails out of bounds. And it's technically a turnover for LeBron. So, like, last night, if we want to just isolate last night specifically, sure, none of the big three, and forget even the big three, like, no Marcus. So you're without your top four players, top four offensive options, whatever. Okay, I give him a little bit of a pass for that. But this had been the case in the Dallas game. This had been the case in the previous OKC game. And this has largely been the case all season where he just struggles to establish position against smaller guys. Or if he does, he turns, he gets stripped. He grabs rebounds. He gets stripped. I can't remember a starting level center playing 30 plus minutes a night getting stripped as often as he has this season. So he's got to work on that. Like, that's like, he's got to do some, I don't know, reflex or hand finger strengthening.
Rock climbing.
Yeah, do something with it. But it's been an issue. I would say to your point about JJ, like, I've been making this point on my show the last, like, you know, post Luka Austin trades. At this point in the season, it needs to be gloves off, and it's just, we're either going to find a way to extend the season or we're not. And I think feelings have to go out the window. Ego has to go out the window. And if we're being really honest about it, this, if you isolate DeAndre Ayton at this point in the season, you have Jackson Hayes, you have Maxi Kleba, you potentially have Drew Timmy if you want to convert him. And DA has a player option that he then has to make a decision on of if he wants to still be in that locker room or not, you know, being coached by JJ or not. With Rui, he's also an impending free agent. And if LeBron stays and they keep Marcus and they keep Luke, that probably decreases the odds that they keep Rui. So Rui has some decisions to make as well. And then with Vando just clearly is not in favor with JJ. He hasn't been in favor with JJ going back to last season. It's not a surprise. So I think that one is self-explanatory. So it's like the three guys he went at, I think there were legitimate reasons to go after each of them, but it's also like they're not necessarily like key parts of this group moving forward. And if he does potentially isolate them, I mean, I think in DA's case, it could actually be a positive for LA if he opts out and they could just move on from that situation. So I think at this point for them to save their season, whatever that looks like, everybody has to be locked in. And JJ made that general point last night of like, I'm looking for the best nine guys. I don't care who they are. And I think we know LeBron's going to be in there. Marcus is going to be in there. I think Luke has played his way into there. Rui will still probably be in there. But beyond that, like, everyone should be held to a certain standard that like, if you are Rui and you're screwing up 2 minutes into a game against OKC, you should be pulled out. If you're DA and you're not catching the ball, you should be benched in the second half. If Vando has like a rough stretch there, all right, then you're getting yanked. Like that's just the reality. Now the handling of it, the way that he did nearly fighting Vando. I mean, if you're just being honest, like they had to be held back. Like JJ got off the bench to approach him. Then also the comments post game, I think he took it a little bit too far. But in general, if the standard is like we need guys locked in and not screwing up, I don't mind that standard.
I think he's trying to keep guys from letting go of the rope and trying to make it clear, like, hey, we know these guys are out, and it's easy to just go, well, that's it, we're screwed. Let's, you know, that's it. We'll just throw our hands up. And JJ is trying to make it clear, like the standard is no, we're not doing that. We are competing every single night. You are still being held accountable for all of these things. And that's what's going to happen. On DA, it reminds me of at the very beginning of the season, I did something with Eddie Johnson, who does commentary for the Phoenix Suns and covered DA for a while. And the end of the show, he said, so you guys got DeAndre Ayton. I said, yeah. He said, let me tell you something about him. He's got itty bitty baby hands. He can't catch the ball. And I can't help but think back to that comment now and think,
Kwame. Kwame Brown.
We were talking about how on Monday, like the best thing that Luka can do is just get his hamstring right for next season. That's his goal for the rest of the season. Just JJ's goal for the rest of the season is to bully DA and to try
not picking up his option.
One thing I'll say about DA, like tactically, that I think is fascinating is like, and I think this affects him in a lot of different areas of his game. He's very upright. Like he's always standing up out of his stance, which I think makes him less explosive on rolls than he could be. I think it's a big part of why he takes such bad angles in pick and roll defense, because he's always so upright. And then lastly, it makes it hard for him to catch the basketball because he's upright. So he has to bend over to get the ball. As opposed to if he's like down in an athletic stance, he's more prepared to like make the quick shifty movements to get the basketball. Like just in general, he stands up out of his stance instead of sitting down low in an athletic stance, which I think hurts him in a bunch of different parts of his game.
All right, we've got
one more quick thing on DA. He went 0 for 4 against OKC this year. He played in all four games. He laid a stinker in all four games. So as we again potentially project a scenario in which the Lakers extend a Houston series, Luka comes back, they push it, win it in 6 or 7, go play OKC. I am concerned about how DA will fare against OKC because I don't think he's even had like a good shift against them this season. And that is concerning.
DA is the guy that goes with the flow. Whatever's going on around him, if there's an opportunity to take the easier path, he will. He's not the guy that's going to see things going south and put his foot down and say, no, we're going this way. You're all following me. And this is the time when you need guys who are going to do that, who are going to say, I'm stepping up. I'm going to do this. We're getting a DA who's like, well, all right, we're probably not going to win. So you know, let's just it, ref. What do we think? Running clock? We good here? Can we, you know, that's the DA that we're getting right now. It's unfortunate because he did really turn things around for a bit there. Now we're back to low energy, DeAndre Ayton. Three games left. What's more important right now? Like, what should be the priority? Trying to get the four seed. I don't think they're getting three. What should be the priority? Trying to get the four seed or maintaining health and just trying to find lineups that work and worrying about the end result of these final three games as a secondary thing. Jason, how do you approach this?
The hard thing for me is, like, I do think the four seed matters from the standpoint of if there's any shot to, let's say, extend the series long enough for LeBron or for Luka or Austin to come back, you need to be in a 2-1 series, right? Like, that's your only shot. You got to be in a 2-1 series. So that would give you 3 weeks to the day of the injuries, right? Because if we're going to say that it's 2 weeks to the day to start the series, that first round is always a little spaced out. Like, you get 2 days off between some of the games. So if you had two of those first three games at home, as opposed to one of those first three games at home, I think you have a better shot of going 2-1. I think that's the best you could hope for, is being down 2-1 after three games. That's going to be much harder to do if you drop to the 5 seed. But if you look at the schedule, like, I just watched Phoenix in their game against Houston yesterday, and Phoenix went on a 24-0 run against Houston in the first quarter. Now, Houston recovered and they won. But Houston's fastball is still fast as shit, man. Like, they get up into the basketball. They run the floor like crazy. Dylan Brooks is talking shit. Devin Booker's getting to the foul line and making shots. And they're just really good. And the Warriors with Steph Curry are not going to be an easy team to beat. So, like, as much as I want the Lakers to get the 4 seed, it just seems like a long shot to me. I think you take it one game at a time. I think you go to Golden State and you try to win. And if you do win, I think you go for it the next night in Phoenix, or against Phoenix, I should say. But if you drop the game to Golden State, I think you punt. Because if you look at Houston's schedule, they have a matchup with Minnesota, which I don't think Minnesota is going to care about anymore, since they've already, like, basically guaranteed the 6 seed. So unless Minnesota just wants to just get a playoff tune-up in, that's probably a win. And their other two games are a home game against Philly, and Philly's playing well, but then another one against Memphis. So, like, it'd be unlikely for them to drop two of those. Let's just put it that way. Like, best case scenario, they drop one of those. So, like, if you do lose in Golden State, I don't think you're going to get the 4 seeds. So I think you just take it one game at a time, and if you lose in Golden State, then you shut down for the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. Jovan, is that where you're at?
Yeah, I think the only thing, or the only potential upside I would see in, like, still playing one of the final two games would, even for like a half, would just be that a lot of these groups have not played together. Like, that starting group against Dallas had not played a single possession this season. I think there was a bench group that had not played a single possession as well in the second quarter. So even if it's just a quarter or two or three quarters, then you pull guys in the fourth, I think getting, like, some reps and some looks, especially if Marcus returns, if he is able to return before the end of the regular season, now you're inserting Marcus into the starting group. And that's a lineup that theoretically has not played together, depending on what that group looks like. So I think there's still value in, like, a quarter or two under their belt of, this is the projected 8 or 9 man playoff rotation. Let's give them, like, a half to forget even the result, forget whatever, like, let's just see what it looks like. Let's get the rotation going. And I think you could build off of that as, like, a proof of concept. That would be the only thing, though, because to Jason's point, if they lose against Golden State, or even if they lose against Phoenix, three is still in play, but you probably have to go, at least 2-1 to get 3, if not 3-0, because Denver now, if you look at their schedule, Denver's going at least 1-2, if not 2-1. They could even win out. If they went out, Denver keeps 3. If they go 2-1, Lakers would have to go 3-0. If they go 1-2, Lakers would have to go 2-1. So 3 is unlikely at this point. But then you still have the Houston matchup. And I do agree with Jason that, like, I think there's a under like full strength circumstances, I would say it doesn't really matter for LA. And it's about like if Luka and Austin were projected to be back by game one, let's just say, I would be like, screw 4-5, like just get healthy into the playoffs. Don't risk further injury for LeBron, Marcus, etc. But when you're the heavy underdog, and we're talking about maybe this being like a 30 win team ish, maybe, then I think home court is going to matter, because I think the most deflating thing would be going to Houston. You lose the first two games. Now you're down 2-0 coming back to LA. And it's like, you're just in a bad spot, where if you're in LA, I think you have a better chance to steal one of the first two games, go back to Houston tied 1-1. Now you have some momentum on your side. So I think there's like a psychological element to, I would still prefer to be 4 if I'm the Lakers rather than 5, but it might be, you know, partly out of their control here.
I also should emphasize that I am of the opinion that Luka and Austin should shut it down. Like, I do not think it's worth dragging Luka back on an injured hamstring for this run. But the universe where you're planning on doing that, I think having home court matters.
I think most likely we've seen the last of, they've played their final games of the season. I think that's the most likely outcome here, is that we don't see Luka and Austin ultimately come back. Can we just forfeit?
Jason Timpf Muse.
Man.
Damn, we don't need to get that dark, okay?
Don't even play.
You need to talk to your muse, Jason.
All right. Let's get into the chat. We need to devote the rest of the show to the chat. First, we're going to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys use the code HMA. You play $5, get $50 instantly. You can use the link in the description down below, the Prize Pick app. Super, super easy to download. Go check it out. I always like PRA, points, rebounds, and assists combined. I do like looking at things like that. Guys, I look at a player like Evan Mobley against Atlanta, kind of a big-ish game. Cleveland, not that I necessarily think it's going to change the standings too much, but Evan Mobley against Atlanta, 31.5 points, rebounds, and assists. Jason, you think Evan Mobley, he's been so inconsistent this year. Can he clear that?
I think that's doable. Though I really like that Jalen Johnson one. Cleveland
has been
great ass on defense ever since the Harden trade. So I think and they've kind of let go of the rope a little bit. So I like that one.
I like it. Let's roll with that. Let's go with that one. And then we got to go with a different team. Do we dare look at like a James Harden? 33.5 points, rebounds, and assists combined against Atlanta, or do you feel more comfortable at 34.5 for Donovan Mitchell?
Mitchell's been due to break out. He's been in a little bit of a slump. And just the sheer pace of the game is probably going to feed his numbers a little bit.
Yeah, let's lean Mitchell over or more. Yeah.
Okay, let's go with that. We put those together, $10 entry fee. You can win $30. If you guys agree with us, great. You can follow along. Use the link in the description down below. If you disagree, bet against us. That can be the way to do it too. Who knows? Maybe that'll work out for you. Go check it out. Prize Picks. Use that code HMA. Play $5. Get $50 instantly. All right, everybody. And if you're going to play, please make sure you do so responsibly. Let's get into our chat here. We'll finish out the show. Some of your questions and comments. Lake Show Yo 96 said, in the infamous words of Magic, I'm not going to be here. God, I remember that. See y'all when the Lakers make the announcement that Luka and AR are making their returns. So that's coming sometime in July that we're going to, when they're making their returns. So that'll be coming up maybe the end of
the
month.
See you in October then, I guess.
In October, I was going to say. I mean, the Austin Reeves return, we could be talking about a new contract in July, but
yeah.
Actually getting on the floor maybe a little bit with Luka and Austin possibly out for the playoffs, will it make it harder to accurately evaluate the team's offseason needs and changes?
I don't think so.
No,
I kind of feel like we know what this team needs. Don't you guys agree?
I think we've known since last summer though. We've known for years, but we've known what this team needs. They masked that a little bit over the last month, but it's still, I think it's pretty clear what they need. The question is, can they go get those things?
I think with Austin, it makes it a little bit trickier just to evaluate him, because I think this was a huge postseason for Austin, and especially with the context of Luka being out, if Austin, like, let's just imagine they stay, like, they drop to the 4-5, like, only Luka's out, right? Austin, it's a minor thing. Maybe he misses even the last couple games, but he's going to be back by Thursday against the Warriors. If Austin was able to go into a playoff setting against Houston and Austin's the one carrying the series, and Austin has a couple of like 28, 30, 32 point games with 7-8 assists and is being hounded by Amen Thompson and like still plays at an all NBA or all-star level, I think that would give the Lakers a lot more confidence in the situation, but also give a lot of the fan base more confidence in paying Austin a 5-year, $200+ million deal. But we're just not going to get to see that. So a lot of it is projecting what he did during the regular season, but also factoring in some of the performance he had against OKC or San Antonio or Phoenix or some of these more athletic, ball pressure heavy defenses. And then also, how do you factor in last postseason against Minnesota? And also knowing the context of that he was injured during that, but he just didn't want to disclose that. I don't really know the answer here, but I think he becomes an interesting player in terms of just how you evaluate him and how you value what he did this season.
It's going to be a big playoff series for him, a big playoff run for him. He had a lot to prove after the way last year went, even the way the year before went, when everybody they're going at 100%. Sometimes that's where the athleticism deficit becomes a bigger issue. Whereas when teams are, you know, it's a random Wednesday in January and you can have a team that's more athletic than you, but they're not as locked in as they're going to be in playoff time, you can get by despite that athleticism deficit. So it was going to be really important for Austin to prove those things this summer, that he still, or in the playoffs, that he can be successful in those situations. So it's unfortunate if this is the final bit of work that we've seen from Austin Reaves going into the summer. And I do think that will probably affect how much he ultimately gets in free agency. But that said, if another team comes along, if Chicago comes along and says, hey, we love guards, here's the max, then what do you do if you're the Lakers? So I think the context of the overall market is going to matter too, in terms of what the Lakers give Austin Reaves beyond just what does his value suggest he should get.
I agree with Jovan. I think that not getting to see another rep of Austin in the playoffs is a big bummer from this season. Cause like, it's information you'd like to have if an Austin trade were to arise at some point in the next two cycles.
Right. Us losing equals the 22nd draft pick, Krivas, Swain, Lopez. Yeah, I mean, I guess that is kind of a silver lining. They get a slightly earlier draft pick, still bottom third of the first round, but you do move up in the tank race, I guess. You get a little bit of an early pick. Who knows? Maybe that could matter, though. At this point, given the way the last few drafts have gone with the 17th pick, I'm not holding my breath. And who knows if they're even making the pick, because they could wind up making a trade.
That's what I was going to say, is like, even like we talked about it with Boston earlier, like Shireman and Gonzalez were the 28th and 30th pick. So it's less about where you are in the draft and more about, are you scouting talent that can actually play in your rotation?
Mamadou said, hey guys, so many people on this team that don't need to be on this team next year, and we might have to use assets to remove some of them. Like, obviously, if they could have moved Dalton Connect at the trade deadline, they would have. Clearly, that wasn't available to them. Jared Vanderbilt is a guy that you'd have to attach assets to in order to move. That could limit their flexibility a little bit too. Like, if DA picks up his option, is he somebody, he's an expiring contract, but is he somebody that's going to provide any kind of a value in a trade? So if the Lakers are looking to make significant moves, there are some players that could be under contract here, or will be in the case of Vando and Connect, that may make it a little bit difficult to have the kind of flexibility that they're looking for. Jovan, would it be worth it for the Lakers to consider attaching an asset to somebody in order to open up a little bit more flexibility?
And we also got a question a little bit later about waiving and stretching Vando, which I think is an interesting possibility here, because if you waive and stretch him, that would be over, it's double the amount of years remaining on the contract plus one. So that would be about $25 million stretched out over 5 years. So you would have a $5 million dead weight on your cap sheet, which isn't great, but I mean, that would give you almost an additional $10 million in cap space, or $9 million or so this summer, which would be nice. Maybe eight, but still eight to nine, like that can help, especially if you're at like 50, 55, that does open some new avenues for you. It's tough. What I would like with a potential dumping Vando is I would like to potentially put it in a larger trade. So for example, one that some people have floated out in my chats have been, do you do like two firsts for Herb Jones, but then you're also dumping Vando in the trade? So it's functionally a first for Herb Jones and a first to dump Vando. And then like New Orleans gets to package it as, well, we wanted two firsts for Herb Jones and we technically got that, even though it's more so taking on the cost of Vando. Something like that, maybe I'd be, you know, not necessarily for Herb Jones, but if you could package him into a larger deal where you're getting something back and it's not just a pure salary dump, because I think it only makes sense to salary dump him if you have a legitimate reason of like, we've mapped out the hypotheticals. This is the alternative here. If we can dump Vando, we can trade for player X or we can sign player Y. You need an actual reason. If it's just, we don't want the dead weight on our cap sheet, like there's some truth to that. There's some value to that, but I don't think at the expense of a first round pick and that limiting your ability to build the roster in the future. So if you could get a scenario in which you can package him into a larger deal, and I mean, on the high side, like if Giannis becomes available, right? And could you find a way to sneak Vando into that or just a different star, whatever. If there's a way to put him in the trade and that includes adding a first, I'm cool with that. If it's just dumping him to dump him and you don't necessarily benefit off of that, maybe it's like, well, now we keep Rui or we keep, like we run it back. I'm a little less sold on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't really work out for them, but similar to like the Bucks, they wave and stretch Dame, and the benefit was, well, okay, we're doing this, but it's going to allow us to go sign Miles Turner. And obviously that hasn't really worked out for them, but the same idea, right? If you're going to do it, if you're going to take that pain, there needs to be a reward at the end of it. There needs to be something that you know you're getting in order to do that, in order to lose that asset or deal with that cap space tied up for, you know, that extra $5 million sitting on your books, just dead money moving forward. Let's go here. Mamadou also followed up and said, I feel like we can't afford to have more than a couple of one-way players. Do we pay Rui if we have Kennard? I've thought about this a lot. Jason, where do you stand on this? If it comes down to it and you have to choose one of Rui or Kennard, who are you keeping?
So I think this all comes down to the money. Like, I don't think I'd want either player at a number that's over that like $11, $12 million range. Like, mm-hmm. To me, neither player can start. And I think you run into a lot of trouble when you have as much payroll tied up in LeBron, Austin, and Luka. I think you have a lot of trouble if you start paying north of like $16, $17 million for a dude who's coming off your bench. And if he is coming off your bench, I need him to be like an Alex Caruso type of like just dead ringer guy who could start or could close a playoff game. And that's just not Rui. Rui's not a good enough defender or a good enough rebounder or a good enough read and react player to justify having him tie up such a large chunk of the cap. We talked about this on Monday. I've grown to really like Rui, rooting for him over the years. I just like him on a discounted contract in a dead serious context like this.
Agreed. Depth should be the goal so that Kennard is our 12th man.
I agree. I talked about this morning on my show. Everybody needs to be slotted down.
Yeah.
But the only way that can happen is if you accumulate talent and they just need to have a lot of wins from a front office that doesn't get wins.
I talked about this a little bit last night, that what you don't want to have is, and you can still improve this way, but like if you replace Rui with another rotation player, now ideally that's a two-way rotation player, and that obviously you improve there. You get somebody who can play both sides of the ball. But if you're replacing somebody who's already a rotation player with a rotation player, that may improve your overall quality, but does that improve your depth? What they really need to do, and it's easier said than done, but replace Dalton Knecht with a guy who is at least a rotation player. Replace, is it Kobe Bufkin? Is it any of these other guys that are taking up roster spots? So you're adding to this team rather than just taking a guy who's already a rotation player and replacing that person with another rotation player. I think you do need to have depth in today's NBA. Just the way we see guys get injured, the way this roster is made up, the way it projects to be made up for the future, you just swapping out rotation players, I don't think is enough. I think they need to swap out guys who are not rotation players for players who will be. And again, that's a tall order, but I think that's got to be what they're looking to do, which moves me more towards the, I don't think they should be trying to go all in on a Giannis Antetokounmpo, because I think they need more depth on this squad in general. And that's the more pressing situation for them.
I have very little confidence in their ability to build a competent roster around Luka, Giannis, and Austin.
Yeah. Lakers Collective is now a therapy session. Thank you for keeping the faith. We're here for you. How many minutes would you play LeBron versus Houston? I mean, in the playoffs?
You go for it with LeBron. I mean, he's got an offseason. As long as his body feels good. Yeah. As long as his body feels good.
As many as he can handle, honestly.
Yeah, and I'd put him in, like, I'd play put him in a passive role on defense where he can save some energy there, because your only hope is him just creating a boatload of quality shots.
I'm going to flip this question for a second to you guys, just based on a point that Jason just made. Who would be your five starters with the current information? Because I think I would go DA, LeBron, Jake, Luke, Marcus. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more of a conversation between Jake and Rui for the fifth spot. I'm just thinking, like, if to Jason's point about like hiding LeBron or just conserving his energy, if you have Luke, Rui, and DA out there, that's just a lot on Marcus and LeBron defensively, and LeBron's naturally going to have to do more. If it's Jake and Marcus, you can use those two guys as the primary guys against, I guess if it's Houston,
KD,
and I was thinking, I don't know if you go Şengün with Jake, mm-hmm. that might be, he might be too small for him, but you could at least deploy him on Jabari Smith, or maybe he's the roamer off of Amen Thompson, whatever. If it's Rui, there's a clear offensive case for Rui to start, of just you lost so much offense with Luka and Austin that you want to try to replace it with Luke and Rui and their shooting and their firepower. But at the same time, I'm like, I think a DA LeBron Rui front court is problematic defensively and on the glass. And I think I would still lean Jake.
I agree with you completely.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
I would get weird with like zone and deep mm-hmm. drop and all sorts of passive schemes that concede jump shots to, like, the Rockets have actually been 40% from three since the Lakers games, but they do kind of get hot and cold, as they've shown this season. So I think you got to play into variance as much as possible.
Who fits better, Bane or Austin Reeves?
I take Austin over Bane in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked last night on my show about like the potential, just would you do a challenge trade like AR for Bane? And they're the same age, so it is a really interesting hypothetical. But Bane also only has three more years left. And Austin, depending on what contract he gets, you could be potentially getting Austin on a longer term deal. So you just have more years locked up, cheaper deal. And just objectively, he had a better season than Bane. His numbers are better across the board. I think he fits better in that sidekick, secondary creator role next to Luka. So I would pick Austin.
Yeah, he's a better secondary creator than Bane would be. Bane has his advantages too, but I would go
better Austin shooter, well. Better defender, bigger.
Fun fact, before the draft that year, remember the Lakers had, what was it, the 28th pick? And they packaged that in the trade for Dennis Schroeder with Danny Green. I talked to Des Bane right before that draft, and he was saying everything short of please draft me Lakers. Like, he very badly wanted the Lakers to use that pick on him. Didn't wind up working out. But
that was also the JD McDaniels pick,
JD McDaniels pick that they wound up packaging.
Imagine JD McDaniels on the Lakers the last few years.
For the record, I do like Desmond Bane. It's just I do really like Austin. Like, that's the thing that's tough, is like I've been critical of Austin, just like we all have. We've all been honest about Austin, but like I believe in Austin, and I would bet on him figuring things out. The dude just keeps getting way better every year. I would bet on Austin.
Rob Pelinka needs to suit up and experience this himself. I mean, they were pretty short on players. I thought at one point that maybe JJ was going to have to throw on a jersey and get out there.
I was going to say, let's start with JJ first.
Let's go there.
The guy who's a few years removed from playing in the NBA as a shooter.
You guys have no hope for Luka returning. What about Reeves? No chance he tries to play through. I still can't believe it's over. I would say no hope. Just I'm not expecting it. I don't want to get hopes up that it's going to happen and they're coming back and then just have disappointment. I'd rather be, hey, a pleasant surprise that they're able to return. I'm also very concerned about returning and then suffering a worse injury because they're not fully ready to go. And that bleeding through the summer, and then it's something that, you know, well, I didn't get a full training camp and getting into next season. So I think they got to be careful with how they play this.
I also think when people talk about Luka returning, there's this sense that, like, let's just say he misses the first three games of the series optimistically. I don't think you just drop Luka in and he's playing 40 minutes a night in like his first game back. Like, typically when guys return from hamstring injuries, they're on a minutes restriction for several games at least. So that's like the other dynamic here of like what level is Luka. And Luka's not a guy who necessarily is going to be relying on his athleticism. So he is someone that, like, we've seen him be hampered at times and still be able to create his own shots, still be able to score efficiently and effectively. So I think like he would still be a useful and effective player, but if he is 70% compared to what he normally is, like, he's not going to be obviously at the MVP level. And then on top of that, he might be on a minutes restriction. So if you're getting like 25 minutes of a compromised Luka, that's still better than some of the rotation guys. We'll put it that way. But like, it's not the Luka we just saw in March who was the best player in the world.
Exactly. The difference between an extremely mediocre Lakers team and a championship contending Lakers team was the stars. And by the way, we've been talking about this since the very beginning of the season. Like, the one thing that is capable of overcoming just about any basketball problem is a superstar playing at the top tier superstar level. That this, by the way, is why the conversation surrounding Luka and Shea and Jokic is a different conversation than the conversations you have about other stars in the league. They are the ones, the sole players in the world that are capable of masking real problems. But that literally means that if they come back and they're not at that level, the roster is just going to continue to look like it did in December and in January. And that's you're drawn dead against Oklahoma City in that situation.
SC Lakers said, overpay for Kessler or Watson, trade two firsts and Vando for Herb or another 3-and-D. Kessler is impossible, then get Claxton. Okay, I mean, I always, RFAs are difficult to get away from their teams, but I get, you know, do you make the effort? Do you see if there's something that can be worked out there? Do you try for maybe a sign-and-trade or something like that? For all three of you, is a ring more impactful for LeBron or for Luka? See, I tend to look at stuff like this and I say it's more impactful for the Lakers. They tie the Celtics. I'm not worried about LeBron or Luka's. Like, but other people get really into the player first stuff.
It's impactful for both. I think more so for Luka, just because at this point, I think Bron has done just about everything, where maybe there are some people on the fence of the GOAT debate that swing to the LeBron side with the fifth ring. But I think whichever camp you're entrenched in, you're still going to believe LeBron's the GOAT, Jordan's the GOAT. I don't know if one more ring changes that. I think it would, because then there's still going to be, oh, 6 versus 5, or like LeBron wasn't the number one option on this team. He was the number two or the number three. So I think that would still be held against him by some people. Whereas Luka, I think if Luka gets his first ring, that elevates him to a different stratosphere, right? Where now, like, we saw what it did for Giannis's legacy. We saw what it did for Jokic's legacy, what it's done for Shea's legacy. Like, now Luka enters a different class of player, and I think we start to look at him as a top 30, top 25 guy of all time already, and then he just continues to ascend from there. So, I think it's more impactful for Luka, in my opinion.
I agree. The thing with Bron is like you said, you can't catch MJ. Theoretically, it gives you a ring over Steph, but really, outside of the Warriors fan base, there's nobody that thinks Steph was better than LeBron. So like that. And by the way, if LeBron got a fifth ring, you think Steph fans are going to suddenly be like, "Oh, LeBron's better"?
That was always such a crazy argument.
LeBron's standing is just what it is. So yeah, I think it's big for the Lakers franchise and it's big for Luka. I just think the fact that LeBron wants one is just a testament to how competitive he is.
Appreciate y'all keeping me up to date. Well, we appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Thank you all of you guys who came to hang out on a truly like probably the least, like, you know, you talk about urgency in the regular season. This is the lowest urgency episode of Lakers Collective ever. And y'all are here with us. So we really appreciate it.
We're cruising right along. Yeah. We appreciate you all being here and hanging out and talking hoops, even in these dire times. My worst nightmare is having OKC Boston in the finals. I mean,
that's what I'm the old guy,
but I am. Unfortunately,
this might be it's the most probable finals, I would say, right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree.
Boston's playing incredible. Boston's actually, I was talking about this on my show this morning, they've become a lot more like OKC. Their three-point volume has dipped. They're seventh in three-point attempts per game post-All-Star break instead of second like they were pre-All-Star break. They, last year, were 17th in mid-range makes per game. This year, they're up to sixth. Jaylen Brown is actually driving the basketball more times per game than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Nemi Kata has given them much more of like a mobile rim protection look than they had last year. He's as vertically imposing as Kristaps Porzingis, but also as mobile as Al Horford. Like, they're, Boston's awesome. Like, I would actually personally be surprised if they didn't win the East.
I'm in the mindset of, look, I don't think the Clippers are an actual threat to get out of the West. So it's anybody but Boston. It's anybody but Boston. I'll be rooting against if it's OKC in the end, I'm rooting for OKC. If it's Denver, I'm rooting for Denver, right? That's the approach that I'm going to take to the final. But I do agree. I think Boston's making it. I don't believe in Detroit. I think Boston's making it out of the East. And I hope whoever gets there from the West absolutely kicks their ass.
How about OKC's path now, too? So they're going to get... So like Phoenix or LA in round one, they're going to get either the hospital Lakers or that Houston Rockets team in round two. And they're going to get like the battered corpse that survives the Denver San Antonio series. For the record, this is why you play in the regular season to get the one seed, because you get the easiest path.
And that's, you know, it's not all that dissimilar. In fact, it's maybe not even as impactful as what we saw Boston when they won the title. I've said it before, first team in NBA history to have a bye to the final. Didn't even have to play. They got to cruise. Every team in front of them just completely collapsed with injuries, got a bye right through to the NBA final, and then won a championship. Now, they were the best team, but the Thunder could wind up having a clear path. All right, let's go through last couple here. We'll just knock them out. If I see this post on Twitter, Lakers are hiring for basketball data strategy and analytics team. Have you guys thought about applying to work for the Lakers as an analyst, etc.? I don't know if you guys have considered. I've always thought about trying to do something like that, but the downside is then none of what we do is possible anymore because we'd fall under the constraints of the collective bargaining agreement, which means you can't talk about players for other teams and you run into a whole host of other issues.
I'd love there's to also work no for a job team security. One day. Go ahead, Neilman.
I was just gonna say, there's also no job security where, like, you could be in the best situation and have great standing with the owner and the GM and the coach and everything, and it's like you could be gone in 2 to 3 years, and then now you're trying to scramble to figure things out. I'd be open to it depending on the role, but I don't think I would want to like. I would be open to it, but I would hope to kind of go in more through the side door than the back door and or the front door. I don't know, whatever. You know what I'm trying to say?
I would love to work for an NBA team just because I love to compete, and I'd much rather compete and try to win basketball games through whatever the means would be, whether that was working in the front office in a variety of capacities, and I would do it for any NBA team. But it's just super unrealistic. So I don't dwell on it. Like, I just focus on what I do every single day because it's an actual real, I'm very in the moment because it's what's realistic with, you know, the career path that we're all on.
if the Lakers came calling or some team came calling, I would have a hard time saying no, of course. But if I mean, Boston. I mentioned in the chat earlier, Boston, I might have an easier time saying no, but I know you guys are right there with me. I love what we do. I love this and getting to do, like, there's no part of me that is thinking, man, I got to get out of this sucks. I need to move on. You know what I mean? Like, I love what we get and feel very fortunate to get to do what we do every day.
Agreed.
All right, we'll finish here. I don't trust Rob to do anything this offseason. Austin recruited Laravia. Luca recruited. See, it's easy to do that, though. I don't like stuff like this where it's you take anything that's good in the ledger and dismiss all of it and only accept the bad. I think you have to, if you're evaluating a GM's moves, they all count. Everything counts. You can't go, well, no, this fell in his lap, so this doesn't count. Oh, but he messed up here, so that does count. I understand, though, the general sentiment of being uncertain about what Rob's going to do this summer. That said, I think if you're concerned about it, the optimistic side would be the Dodgerification process is here. And under Mark Walter, the front office will be built out and may look different. There's going to be different voices in the room and all of that. So if you're looking for optimism on that side of things, that, hey, I don't have a lot of faith based on what Rob has done in the past. I don't like what he did in the past. If that's you, keep in mind, things are indeed changing. So it'll be interesting to see how this summer plays out as a result of that. All right. Jovan, did you want to add something in there?
I was just thinking, I mean, yeah, we've talked about the front office and some of the skepticism. I think there's a lot of pressure this summer to nail it. And if you keep the pick, you have to nail the pick. It cannot be another botched situation. If you trade the pick, you got to nail the trade. And I just think this is going to be like, I've talked about this over the past year or so, like they've been very inactive during summers. They have not made the last offseason trade they made was August 2022. We're going on almost 4 years since then. So they have to do some things that they have not done and that they have been a bit conservative with. And I just think it's a big challenge, but they have new ownership. They are revamping the front office this summer, and I'm intrigued to see where things go.
Yep. Yep. Big summer ahead. Obviously, we've got more basketball ahead before we get to that, but appreciate everybody for joining us. Please make sure you hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so yet. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Guys, always fun doing this show, and can't wait for next one.
It's good to see you guys. What'd you say you have on Monday, Thursday next week?
I think we're going to go Monday, Thursday. So Monday, we'll recap the next three games. We'll know where the Lakers are at playoff-wise. We'll probably do like a mini preview, and then I think we'll do a more extensive preview on Thursday.
Sounds like a plan. All right, everybody. Till then, see ya. And stay safe.